Hi, guys. Just a reminder that this podcast, as well as many of my online resources, is delivered freely. If you would like to help me get this message of healing out to millions of people around the world, please consider clicking on the donate button on my website, thecureforchronicpain.com. Thank you. Hello, guys. Happy day. How are you? This is Nicole, and welcome to my podcast, The Cure for Chronic Pain, with me, Nicole Sachs. It's great to be with you guys. Hope this day is not a shitty one. Let's start there. You may be a parent sending your kids back to virtual school. You may be an essential worker that is just had it up to here with this entire pandemic culture and what it asks of you, what it demands of you. Or you may be having the best day ever. And honestly, I just hope that no matter what kind of day you're having, you can find your moments of joy in it, because honestly, that is the way. That's the only way. We must live within the confines of a human life, and so finding our moments of joy and doing our actionable items to get there, dude, it's everything. So welcome to the podcast. Welcome to my personality. How are you? I hope you're good. All right, today we are together for an awesome real-time heal. And I know I always say this, and I know you guys are like, Nicole, you always say this. This one's really special. It might even be my favorite ever. And I mean that only with love for every real time heal I've done, because every time I get another chance to be with someone in their honesty, in that space of real humanity, it just blows me away. And today was just so special for me. I just really loved it. So today I'm going to introduce you to Robin. He is a young man. He is just, I think he's 19. I forget exactly how old he is, but he's very young. He's a college student, and he has been suffering with lots of different chronic pain symptoms pretty much for a lifetime, and issues around sexuality, issues around shame, issues around being the identified patient in the family, and also a self-identified healer in the family, meaning he's going to be the one that's the good boy. He's going to be better than his brother, so he doesn't inconvenience anyone. I mean, these are just powerful themes that I think I've seen thread through many, many, many people's stories, and much, much more than just those little things I just described. I so enjoyed helping Robin. My whole heart was just right there. And I'm just really excited to share that with you, because I can't imagine that each person would not get something out of this, no matter whom you are, no matter what is your struggle and where you find yourself on the spectrum of gay or straight or, you know, anything that could challenge you. I just feel like this is a beautiful story that everyone can find their place in. So I hope you enjoy it. As this podcast drops, I think there's about 1 week left to my virtual retreat. So I'll just, you know, always mention that if you want to work with me personally, if you want my personal attention to your problem, answering your personal questions, please do come. It will be wonderful. I have a few spots left, not many, but enough that, you know, the first few people who decide to act on this in the next week, they will get in. So I do encourage you to do that if you want to, if you want to join us, if you want to join a healing community, if you want to find some comrades on this beautiful but painful journey, and if you want to be with me. I'll be here all weekend. It is September 18th through the 20th, 2020, virtual, available to anyone who can deal with being on the East Coast time zone, because it is East Coast times. And all information is on the retreats tab of my website, thecureforchronicpain.com. All right, not much more today, except we're going to get right to our real-time heal. I only ask that If this podcast is something that has meant something to you and you are enjoying and benefiting from, please just go over to iTunes and rate and review it, because that is the way people find the podcast and open themselves to this incredible healing. So I hope you can do that, because it really helps me. All right, my loves. Well, I send you love and light, and I really look forward to sharing this real-time heal with you, myself, and Robin. Enjoy. Hi, everybody. Welcome to Real Time Heal. Today, I have Robin with me, and I'm so excited to hear his story and help him. So per usual, Robin, I'm going to hand it over to you. Tell me everything, and we'll see where it takes us.
Awesome. Thank you. So I'm just going to tell kind of my story up to where I am right now around my pain and my emotions, all the things, if that works.
Yes.
Awesome. So I'm 19, by the way, so I haven't lived a ton of life, but some of the earliest memories that I have are of my family in conflict. My brother had some issues when I was young. He was a really angry child, and there was always conflict between him and my mother, and my dad was always intervening and often making things worse. I remember him like threatening to kill himself once, and I remember one night when he like slept outside of the house. And so I became super defensive of my mom. And I knew from an early age that like I was going to be the perfect child, like the child. My family had enough conflict and like they wouldn't have to worry about me ever. When I was a young child, I had a sexual experience. I wasn't abused, but my parents found out about it and proceeded to take me out of the, you know, care and kindness of their hearts to various therapists for years. And while it wasn't their intent, I developed so much shame around myself and especially anything sexual. And I've realized recently that I've lived my entire life believing that I was sick and dirty because I had actually enjoyed that experience, and I didn't understand at that age that what I was doing was wrong. And I guess I started to believe that like if something felt good to me, then it was wrong and shameful. And so looking back, I can see that the TMS started really young and has been here my whole life. I developed really bad OCD shortly after that experience, and I spent years going to therapists, feeling like I was sick and everyone was getting in my business. I started getting really bad migraines almost weekly that went away years later after I started on an herbal supplement, but I totally know it was TMS. I developed a really strong codependency on my mom, and every night I would write her these confessional letters of everything I felt like I was a bad person for. And looking back, I think this was me kind of wanting to double check that I wasn't insane, like I had grown to kind of believe after going to all these therapy sessions. And it became...
So you're saying the therapy led you to question yourself, to believe that indeed you were insane?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I didn't know that... I didn't understand as a young kid, like, why I was being kind of treated like someone sick. You know, does that make sense?
Yes, of course.
Okay, totally. So it became really hard for me to sleep in my own bed. My mom wouldn't want me to sleep in hers, I later learned, because my dad, he was like, you know, Robin should sleep in his own room. And I've always felt like really resentful of my dad for that kind of like straight white male mentality that showed up a couple times during my life. I remember one night in particular that I spent crying outside my mom's door, like sleeping on the floor until she let me in. My mom has always loved me so much. Both my parents have. And my mom's always insisted that I'm like so pure and beautiful, such a wonderful child. And I've always felt so angry with her about that because I felt like the exact opposite for so much of my life. And I feel like it, and part of my like brain feels like it's her fault that I feel that way. And I've become really codependent on her, less now, but much more when I was young. So it's created a lot of conflict.
Yes.
In middle school, I would get sick about a week out of every month. No fever, my body just gave up. And that went away when I started using a nasal spray a couple years ago, but totally TMS. In eighth grade, I came out as gay, I went to a great school in a lot of ways. It was private school, but it was very conservative. And my class had 25 people in it who had all been together with the same teacher since first grade. That's a thing in itself. All the guys in my class got really distant from me. Most have unfollowed me on social media, never spoken to me again. Even the ones who spent like every weekend at my house have completely blocked me out of their lives. And I've always felt responsible in a lot of ways because I kind of acted out for a while just trying to figure out who I was. And I think that made them really uncomfortable and distanced them. In ninth grade, I went to the public school. That was my choice. And it was like utter culture shock coming from this small, quiet school I had been at. I was so afraid. I'm a singer, songwriter, and pianist. And as my voice started changing, I became really concerned after my throat was always tense, like all the time. And I thought there was something wrong. So I went to various doctors, including vocal specialists. Nothing could be found. I worked with a great voice teacher with a PhD for 4 years. She was never able to fix the tension in my throat. It did go away for about a week before I performed at my school's talent show. And then I got sick the night of, and it came back the next day because I didn't like place in top three or win any awards. In 10th grade, I started developing bilateral pain in both of my arms really bad, starting at the elbow and going all the way down. I put off doing anything about it for a while, but after I kind of came around to that, I went to a doctor who told me I had cubital tunnel and gave me PT and these really uncomfortable braces I had to sleep in every night to straighten out my arms. And over the next 2 years, I went to like every doctor and every massage therapist, acupuncturist, Ayurvedic healer, you name it. I had every study, every test done, and no one found anything. My piano teacher, who I've always been really scared of, that was kind of a part of my childhood, had similar pain in college and told me to stop playing for a summer while for hours a day I did these retraining exercises to kind of teach myself to play without tension that would supposedly stop the pain. Guess what?
Painful. I'm in pain.
Yeah, it was bad. And at the end of that summer, I went off to my first semester at Berklee College of Music. So that was very scary for me going to music college, but with both of my musical instruments, my voice and my arms, which I used to play the piano, handicapped. At the same time that the arm pain came on, this is like 10th grade-ish, I developed testicular pain, had every test for that as well, no results rendered. And jumping back to the kind of emotional part, in high school, I started realizing that there were people out in the world who hated me for being who I was. I remember learning about Matthew Shepard and his murder, and there's this voice in my head that was like, that's what's waiting for you if you keep being yourself. Like if you become more of yourself, that's the kind of fate that is waiting for you. And as someone who's working really hard to be a highly successful touring musician, my want for attention and fear that attention would get me hurt battled every day. Let's see. Okay. So looking back to that kind of summer right before college, I can't believe that I made it through that summer. Every week I was going to doctors, therapists, acupuncturists, doing hours of physical therapy and hand exercises while nothing changed. I was 18 and I felt like my body was breaking down and the universe had completely abandoned me. To this day, my body starts freaking out when I get in a car because it thinks I'm going to the doctor.
Wow.
Yeah. And me and my best friend, who's been my sister since I was 5 years old, had a massive falling out that summer. And my trust in people was completely shattered. And I cannot emphasize the pain of like shopping for your dorm at music college while it seems like you'll never be able to make music again. And I felt so unworthy also of all the money and time that was being spent on my well-being. I didn't feel like I deserved it. Sad. So this past year was my freshman year at music college, weathered through, even though I had vocal tension, bilateral arm pain, and I developed anal itching. Oh my God, so personal. Yay. That no doctor, specialist, whatever test could explain. And everyone told me how amazing college would be. It'd be the best experience of my life. And I suffered through that year. I felt so insecure and so distanced because of my pain and other symptoms. And I didn't want to go and meet people. I felt like I did when I was young and my brother and his cool friends like wouldn't want me to hang out with them. I've really felt like a burden all my life, but when I had this kind of pain, that really made me feel like a burden. I've realized also that part of me like really wants to like create an identity around pain and suffering. As sick as it sounds, I think I would have been really happy to have had like childhood cancer or something really awful like that, because I would have gotten pity and have been thought of as like a brave fighter. And really sick, but I've noticed that part in me that also doesn't want to like let go of this TMS stuff, wants to keep the pain.
Right.
A few more things.
Yeah, tell me everything. This is all so helpful. I'm just ticking in my brain of all the things I want to say to you, but I want you to tell me everything first. So keep going.
Alrighty, great. We're almost there. I've also developed like such intense sexual shame as I've gotten older. I think it stems from that first experience that I had. I've done a lot of work on it in my journal speak and with my therapist, but there's still a large part of me that like literally cannot piece together the how a person can be like a good person and also a sexual person. Like that divide has really been shattered in my mind. So the summer before I went to college, I went to a concert, Evanescence, woohoo, and was really taken with the opening band. Then I went off to school. When COVID hit, I got sent home and I started talking to the front woman of this band on Instagram, and somehow the subject turned to chronic pain. She mentioned TMS, referred me to the wiki. And the cool thing about that band is that their name comes from the Latin root for truth, which is a cool thing looking back.
What band is it, Robin?
It's Viridia.
Okay.
Yeah.
I just wondered if I had heard of it. All right, go on.
Totally. So from the wiki, I found Curable, and that was the week you went on the podcast to talk about journaling, and like I knew my life was saved. I was so hooked, and I've been journaling pretty much every day, sometimes twice for a few months. I haven't really seen any decrease in my symptoms, with the exception of the anal itching that I had, that's pretty much gone, so that's good. But I so believe that this is for me, and I'm working. I'm practicing patience and kindness for myself. That's probably the hardest one for me. And I do believe now. So yeah, the symptoms I'm still dealing with are the arm pain for sure, the throat tension for sure, and the testicular pain. So that's where I am right now.
Oh my God, I have so much to say to you. Okay, where do I begin? All right, the first thing I want to say to you, Robin, is there are two realities to every single person. There's the reality of today, because we are sentient grown-ups, even though you're 19, let's still call you a grown-up, where we know, you know, like we know things. We know things that are right before us. And then there's the reality of the way our brains were wired, mainly around trauma as children. And so what my first question is, before we delve into the beautiful, rich information that you've given me, and thank you for that. I want to know, as a grown-up, as a 19-year-old man, out gay man living in Boston, right? You live in Boston?
I'm in Atlanta right now, but I go to school in Boston.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so basically, you know, a student at Berkeley in Boston, do you today think that your life is in danger because you are an out gay man?
No, I do not.
Good. Because it's not. Because fuck everyone. Okay? That's A. I can't even slightly, because you know what? You're amazing. And there's so much in my heart that I want to say to you. But the first thing I need to know is, are you scared today? And the answer is no. And I'm thrilled, because you should not be. And that does not mean that gay people are not in danger in certain ways all over the world. And we grieve for them and we fight for them. However, I don't believe you're in danger today. And I wanted to make sure of that. Okay.
Thanks. Wait, I'm just going to say one more thing about that. I do not feel that I am in danger. My brain
right.
does. Yeah.
Because that's the childhood stuff that we're going to get to in a minute. But I just wanted to make sure. My second question is, and this might be a little bit more difficult to piece apart. Do you today, not worrying about your brain, but just your sentient being today, feel as if you are broken, flawed, sick?
No.
Excellent. You don't have to answer me the way you think I want to hear it, though. Are you sure?
Yes.
Okay. Do you today feel as if your sexuality is shameful because you're a gay man?
No.
Perfect. Beautiful. So what I'm hearing from you is in your grown-up, adult, logical brain, we have an ally. We have an ally who knows that there is nothing wrong with you. In fact, there's so much right with you. But what we need to do is we need to rewire this complex PTSD that has been formed in three areas, which are perfectly aligned to where your symptoms are. They were born in your sexuality. So that's the testicular stuff. They were born in your passion to express yourself through your hands as a pianist, through your throat as a singer. So in a beautiful way that is hard to always perceive as beautiful, your brain and your nervous system are protecting you with the loving kindness that you did not receive from the universe as perceived as a child. Does that make sense to you?
It does, absolutely.
They are coming together to say, oh, Robin, such a dear soul. We can't let him enjoy sex because it makes him too shameful and scared. We can't let him play the piano because what if he doesn't get picked on the top three for the talent show? We can't let him sing because what if he's disappointed and he takes us on the or even worse, he's awesome and he takes us on the road and we get killed. Let's stay really still.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So this is beautiful, but it is also incredibly misguided. But you are very, very awake. And so it can all be reversed. And I'm 100% sure of that. Your future is so bright. I was diagnosed at 19. I started this at 19. You are lucky, my friend, to be given this gift
absolutely.
So young. Okay. So let's take each of those three areas separately. So my first question is, and only describe this to the extent that you're comfortable, because obviously we're doing this in a public forum. This first sexual experience that started everything, do you feel comfortable talking more about it?
A little bit.
Okay, because I'm interested to know if indeed it was with loving kindness that your parents whisked you to a therapist, because it's important.
Yeah, that's a good question. I'm not sure if, I mean, I'm sure they thought it was loving kindness. For me, it registered as like fear on their part.
That's what I'm thinking. So it was with a man?
It was, yes. Someone a few years older than I was.
So are you comfortable telling me the ages?
As best I can remember, I think I was about 7 and they were probably about 12 or 13.
Okay. All right. So what, and that's all I need to know. So what I am understanding here is that there was nobody at fault in this initial injury. You were not at fault, certainly, because you are just a sweet baby who would certainly have no power there. The 12 or 13 year old, I mean, you know, you might say one should know better at that age, but I don't know. I mean, if you didn't feel that you started out saying you did not feel that it was abuse, you were not coerced, you weren't threatened, right?
Correct.
You felt that it was a loving interaction.
Yeah.
Okay. So I'm not saying it's wrong, right or wrong, because, you know, those two ages of children, they're both children. And so it was, I think, curiosity probably on his part, and you were happy to go along because it felt good to you. And children, I often find this a lot in my own personal work with my therapist. The times that I'm most damaged are the times that I was blindsided by life, that I walked into a situation with a big smile on my face and my arms open. I said, here I am. And somebody just freaking kicked me in the teeth, you know, proverbially of like, no, you're not. You better shut up. You better sit down. You're not welcome. You're not wanted. Those are the times that we feel the mark of our childhood. And it seems like when you got involved in that situation, you didn't have a concept that this could create such a firestorm.
No, I think I knew on some level that it would be not good if anyone found out. But I didn't I didn't register it on quite the scale that like my parents did when they found out. Yeah.
Yes. Okay. So another thing I want to bring up here in concert with this is your first major decision, as you explained to me in life, was you were not going to be the problem child.
Right.
There was one in the house already. He was causing enough problems for everyone, and you were going to be perfection. So I can only imagine the wound that with the deep wound that was created in you, where all of a sudden you might have known it was a little naughty and maybe it's best if parents don't find out, but all of a sudden you have become a tremendous problem because this happened to you. You participated in it. You didn't hate it. And now all of a sudden you're the identified patient. You have to be going to all these therapists.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's deep, honey. That's really deep because you, as a little kid, we make decisions and they are so like, they're so lovely. They're just so tender that we say, I'm going to be the good one. You know, I will not disappoint. And like, we're like so bold. It's so true for us. But like, of course, we have no idea that that's an impossible goal. But not only were you smacked with, you know, learning young that it was an impossible goal, or at least it was going to be really challenging, you were thrown into the deep end of the pool with being, you know, a person that had really rocked the boat in the family. And so I just want you to understand that this is why your neuropathways are so deeply wired, that even though you know as an adult, you are safe, you are okay, you're not flawed or broken, you're not sick, and you're not to be ashamed of yourself, even though you know that, that little guy, he doesn't. And that's our work. That's our work, because even though, you know, you're doing it. So first of all, you're doing everything right. You're already doing it. But I think the reason that you are somewhat slow to see the pain start to be in traction with what you're doing is he's just a little guy. And we're going to need to take our time with him because he is not going to be quick to trust. Enough stuff has gone down. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, I do.
So how does it feel to hear all this?
Like such a relief. Yeah. I mean, I know on some level that all those things that, you know, my brain tells me are true are not and are misguided. And it feels like, I mean, it feels like such a relief to have someone say that to me. And it feels like such a relief to have my suffering understood. And I had never made the connection between wanting to be that perfect child and then being this huge problem. Like I'd never connected those two things. And that makes a lot of sense for me.
Oh yeah. I mean, it's tantamount to a psychic break. Like you had a thing that you defined yourself as. And think about just a little kid's ideas. Like it was important, you know, you saw this bad boy, you weren't going to be it. And all of a sudden, from such a beautiful, innocent curiosity, you know, it might not have been 100% great situation, but on your part as a 7-year-old, it's just beautiful curiosity. That's all a 7-year-old's capable of. And you get this information that you are going to be the one that is bad. I mean, I can't emphasize enough how big that feels for me.
Yeah, it feels really big for me too.
Yes. Okay. So now I want to talk a little bit about what it meant to be a musician, because I'll tell you, this is a bit personal for me. My son is a musician. And he was a troubled little boy. He had a lot of sensory issues. He had a lot of self-control issues. He was removed from 3 preschools. I would come and they would just say, we can't educate him. He throws all the books off the bookshelf. And he was such a lovely boy, like such a sweet, tender, but he would get, we didn't know what was wrong with him. I mean, he had every test under the book. He was, they tested him. They thought he might be autistic. They didn't know what was going on. So finally we found this wonderful doctor. He was about 4 years old. And he said, listen, there's nothing wrong with your son. He's super intelligent and he's super anxious. And so when a little kid goes truck, boom, boom, he wants to have like an intricate conversation and he can't. And so he goes nuts. And so we basically had him in an occupational therapy and we did a lot of early intervention. So he's 16 now and he's this incredible musician because when he was 7, we bought him a drum set just thinking that he would just like get his yayas out. And he's like this, he's this like, he's an incredible percussionist and he plays the guitar and he plays the piano and he's, and he composes and he's amazing. He might end up at your school. But any case, the reason that I think that I can feel the gravity of music for you is when you're a little kid and you have a challenge, whatever that challenge may be, when you find out you've got a little bit of talent, when you find out you've got a little bit of power, and not only power, but power that makes people feel happy with you and feel good about yourself, it takes on an importance that can sometimes feel very dangerous. And I'll explain why. But first, I want to know, what has music meant to you? How old were you when you knew that you had a little something, maybe more than the kid next to you? And tell me a little bit about that musical part of you.
Totally. So when I was 5, I started begging my parents for piano lessons. When my mom was pregnant with me, my dad had actually asked her kind of one day out of the blue if she wanted to get a piano. And so she said yes. And then I was born and I was fascinated with it. I'd always go and like touch it and just play the keys. And so when I was 5, I started begging for piano lessons. My parents made me wait till I was 7, which I'm grateful for. And I definitely started taking some feelings out on the piano. My early music that I wrote was really sad. I remember one song I wrote about like a dog who ran away from home and got hit by a car, like really sad stuff. Yeah. And like, I remember one Christmas, it was always this annual like family fight over putting up the Christmas tree. And I remember one year, like I didn't want any part of it. I just went into the music room and I just sat and like played the piano while the rest of my family like yelled, no, to the left, you know. So it's definitely been an outlet for me. And it's definitely been a way for, I almost want to say a way for me to distance myself from the rest of the world. Because I guess on some level, I felt like if I have talent, and if I have art, I can write these songs that will like shock and surprise. And
yes,
people won't understand me. So they'll leave me alone, or they'll you know, kick me out of their circles or whatever, but it's fine. It's okay if I suffer, because like one day I'm going to be something and they're all like going to be sorry.
Totally. Oh my God. So it was salvation.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. So this, honey, like I can't even tell you, like I wish I had you in front of me so I could squeeze you. Like it, do you understand how beautiful your TMS is? Do you understand how perfect it is? Because something that important, your very salvation in your throat and in your arms and hands, how could you safely embark upon this? It meant too much. It meant too much. I mean, what if it didn't work? Oh, you're much more safe. Just go to bed. You know, close your eyes, close the shades, lay quietly. Your brain and your nervous system are so loving and so protective and so forward thinking, but they're like, they're a combination of a 5-year-old child and like your 85-year-old grandmother all wrapped into one. Like they think that you're safer that way, but it's just because they're like wringing their hands over loving you so much that they would rather you have that safety because there was too much riding on it, too much riding on it. And you know, it's funny because with Oliver, my son, when I see what music has done for him, and P.S., the end of that story is he has absolutely no more behavioral issues. He is a thriving, great kid. And he, I attribute it all to music, but sometimes I see him needing music to be something. And it scares me because it's when we need something to be something to save us, it can be very sketchy territory for the nervous system to be like, man, that feels like it's too important. What if it doesn't work? And so that's where we come in as our grown-up selves, as that man I spoke to earlier who said, I am not broken. I am not shameful. I am safe, I'm okay. That's the guy we need to take with us and hand in hand go back for those little boys. And that will be what ends up making your brain completely release. That's going to be the path for you.
Mm, I absolutely see that. I also wanted to say, I never, ever, ever thought about what you just said about, like, I felt like I had explored every part of my mind, but that's so true. It totally was my salvation. And you're so right that there's too much writing on it. And the way that my OCD has come out the most has been around my music. Like, I have spent hours, like, late into the night changing, like, the font and typeface on my musician website, confident that it would propel me forward in some way. Like, that's the way my OCD comes out the most, in trying to, like, make me known and seen. Cause I think you're right. Cause there's too much writing on it, and it has to happen. But also my brain and nervous system, you know, see the damage it's doing to me and want to protect me and keep me safe. And also kind of tying it back to what we're talking about earlier, you know, if it took me somewhere, and as I believed it was a, you know, dangerous world with, like, people waiting to hurt me, why would I do that, right, when I could just stay in bed?
Exactly. I can't tell you how healing it is when people get this and realize that what we need to do is we need to go back and rewrite the story, and we can. You know, I mean, did you ever look into the work of Dr. Joe Dispenza?
I did not.
Okay, well, he's an interesting guy. I mean, it's way too much to talk about in like this podcast, but he's an interesting guy. Some of his stuff to me is really right on. Some of his stuff is a little out there. But one thing he does talk about is quantum physics, and he talks about how really time is a bit of an illusion, and time is not linear. And, you know, I can wrap my mind around that when it comes to the work I do, because when we go back and we help these little girls and boys inside of us rewrite what happened, today changes for real. Like, it's not like that happened, now this happened, and now we have to heal something that's mended. It literally stops being a problem. So I'll give you an example of that. And I always use myself as an example, because why not? Because it's the easiest. It's the person I know the best.
Totally.
Is that I, when my kids first hit like middle adolescence, I used to have tremendous feelings about the way people, if people would leave them out, or if they didn't get invited to a birthday party, or if they didn't have a good day at school. Like, you would think that I would need to have a panic attack over these things. It was so much bigger. The reaction was so much bigger than it deserved. So I was talking to my therapist, and he said, well, tell me what ninth grade was like for you. And ninth grade was a horrible year for me. And on like 100 levels, we had moved, and I didn't have any friends, and my body was changing, and I felt shameful about sexuality. I felt shameful about, I thought I was fat, you know, all the things that happen to kids. And, but it was particularly bad. And he had me go back and sort of meditate there for a moment, in terms of really bringing myself back there and saying to that girl, who I can picture right now, right where she was sitting in her bedroom, tell me what I need to know. I'm listening. Just tell me. Tell me all about your life. Tell me all about how it feels to be you. Tell me what you feel about your parents. Tell me how it feels to wait for the school bus when no one will talk to you. Tell me how it feels in the hallways where you feel like you're invisible. Tell me. Tell me what you miss. Tell me what breaks your heart. I'm listening, and I'm fascinated. And I sat and did that exercise for like hours. And when I was done, I no longer felt upset about anything that happened with my kids. Like, I would feel normal upset. Obviously, if my kids come to me and they're sobbing, I'll feel upset. But like, nothing got me. It was like I needed to feel. I totally changed from just feeling into her. So does that make sense to you?
Absolutely.
Yeah. It's really powerful the way we can rewrite things.
Yeah, I see that. Mm-hmm.
So there are three areas. Well, no, actually, I'm not going to go there yet. I want to ask another question. Tell me about your relationship to this straight white man who is your father.
Yeah. Great dad in so many ways. Very loving, very kind, really encouraging of me and, you know, believing in me. But also, I don't think 100% understood me as a child. And I think it really did his best. But like, I remember he signed me up to play sports, and I wasn't like really into that. And, you know, we all have a balance of, you know, masculine and feminine energy inside of us. And, you know, I've always felt like I have more of a balance than, you know, maybe like the man next to me. And so I'm not exactly sure that he was always really comfortable with that, more with like the feminine energy that existed in me. And when I came out, he was very supportive. Well, he was supportive. He also didn't like mention it to me for like a year. It took him like a long time to talk to me about it. And I think that was coming from a place of like, he didn't really understand and know what to say. And I remember him saying to me, like, I love you and support you. I'm just a little bit concerned for you because it's a harder life.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. The reason I'm asking that question, and thank you, because that was really helpful, mm-hmm. is that the messages we get that are underlying are as important as the messages that are overt. And oddly, I think a lot of people with TMS tend to suffer more with underlying messages. Like if you had a hateful dad who said, screw you, Robin, you're a shame, get out of my house. I know that sounds like awful, but believe it or not, those kids tend to do better in terms of the TMS world because they just get really defiant and they're like, fuck you. And there's no conflict over, but he loved me, but why do I feel so icky around him? You know?
Absolutely.
And so, you know, because I always tell people it's the conflict that kills. If you feel all one way about something or all another, you tend to be able to move through it quickly. It's conflict that gets it stuck in our body. I love him, but I hate him. I want him in my life, but he's driving me crazy. You know, she's so important to me, but she makes me feel like shit. Like those are the relationships that get people all TMS'd out because it gets stuck. And so let me ask you a question. In your perception of your father, do you think your father was just scared?
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I do too. And as a parent, I can give you this information since I am one. It is so freaking hard to parent through your fear when your fear is real for you. Like I have stuff that happens to my kids and I'm not judging them, but I'm so terrified the world's going to judge them. I know that my energy sometimes comes through and I'm like, stop it. Like it's so hard. It's so hard to fight your fear when it comes to your kids. So, I think it will be helpful for you to sort of marinate in that. It doesn't mean that it's an excuse for his energy because we're still here standing in defense of that little guy that was feeling that energy and feeling like he was a bad boy and feeling like he was shameful. But we need to add that to your docket of understanding as a grown man, which is, I was never shameful. I was never bad. We need to totally rewrite this. I felt shameful and bad because I was feeling the fear of my father and probably my mother projected onto me, and I translated that fear to shame. But it never was. It's like going back and watching a movie again that you watched when you were little that you thought was real and now you know is fake, and how different it feels. We need to do that for that little guy.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I feel like I got more fear from my mother than I did from my father. I think my mom was, at least this is the impression that I got, was like really scared of me. Not like scared of me, scared for me, perhaps. After the trauma, you know, that I had in childhood, my family fighting, that sexual experience, I think she was really concerned about what that would do to me. And, you know, thus all the therapy things. And she was never really, I feel like, on board with the kind of darker, more artistic side of me. On one side, I'm like very happy person, la la la. And on the other side, I have this like very deep feeling darkness, you know, that kind of artistic side of me. Like I remember finals week, senior year in high school, telling her that I felt like a car in a car crash that had been like hit and was like spinning through the air and was now like skidding across the pavement. Cause like that, I mean, that was kind of journal speaking. That's how I felt. And I remember her like looking at me and being like, that's kind of sick, Robin. And I don't know why I remember that moment so clearly. I think because I was being like so vulnerable. And
yes,
open
you, about you how took I the felt. Risk.
I took yeah. the risk. And in return, what I got was like, that's kind of sick, which is what I always feared that I was, especially around her.
You know, I really love that you said, I feel like my mother was scared of me. And then you amended it to, I feel like my mother was scared for me. And I'm going to bring it back. Your mother was scared of you. And I understand her. I understand all of it. And I think it's helpful that you understand it because we are scared of our kids. We're terrified of them because we are. No, we are. Straight up. We are so scared of the way it makes us feel to watch them suffer that it can translate to we disapprove of them. And that is very important. I speak to all parents out there to know that if you are not aware that you are frightened of your children, because when your children either screw up or suffer or have anxiety that you feel like you can't fix, you are so scared of the way that makes you feel about yourself and about your ability to parent. It's almost a biological fear. It's like a Darwinistic fear. Like I can't show up for this offspring of mine. That I feel like in human parents, it translates to disapproval. Does that make sense to you?
100%. I mean, I think both my parents are still scared of me. I think they love me a lot, but I think that fear is still there.
Absolutely. And I'll tell you when they're going to stop being scared of you. When you're standing on your own two feet integrated. Because what you'll be able to say to them is, yep, all that bad shit happened. And yep, that was a really rough ride. And yes, I used to be riddled with pain and really in conflict between my child brain and my adult brain. But guys, I got it now. I am good. I have done the work. I know who I am. I'm just as gay. In fact, I'm a little gayer. And I'm just as, you know, talented. In fact, I'm a little bolder. And I'm just as dark. In fact, you know what? I'm even darker. But I got it. And on that day, which is coming for you, your parents will say, oh, thank God, because we just want to love you, but we were so scared.
Absolutely. 100%. Something you mentioned about the like conflict between my child brain and my adult brain. That's something that came up in my journal speak recently. I felt like I had two voices in my journal speak. One was the voice of like this child who was like, I don't want to, like, stop making me do these things that I'm so uncomfortable with. And that would be like the voice of fear and sadness and like shame and all that stuff. And then the other voice, I almost thought of it as like this older brother that was like, come on, like, we're going to go play, like, stop being so scared. Like, why are you like the worst little brother? You want to hang out with me, but like, you won't, you're so freaked out. And, so I think that's like, that totally lines up for me of, that part of my brain that wants to like move on and get on with life. And then the other part of me is like, no, stop.
So let's try to add a third entity there. So we've got the scared little kid and we've got the annoyed brother, and we need both of them because this is an integrated person we're trying to create, and they're all in there. But can we bring in the loving parent? And I don't want one of your parents. I want you. I want you, the entity of you, because it quite frankly is our responsibility as we grow older to reparent ourselves. That's just totally the way it goes. And I want that loving guy who embodies the energy you're feeling from me today, which is you are so perfect exactly as you are. I feel it with every fiber of my being. And you know what, guys? We're going to get through this because we still need to do the work, you know, to make sure that that perfection is translated through all these little guys we have to help. But I know that. I will tell you, Robin, the certainty with which you answered my questions when I said, do you think that you're shameful today? You were like, nope. I'm like, do you think that you're safe? You said, yes. That kind of gentle certainty is what we need in that entity.
That makes a lot of sense. Yeah, that makes sense to me. It's kind of funny when you were talking about being that kind of parent figure and, you know, you are perfect and as you are, and that like child voice inside my head, like literally started screaming. And it does this whenever I kind of am that way to myself, like, you were perfect, I love you as you are kind of thing. It starts going like, liar, like,
yeah,
you know,
good.
You made me into this and now you're going to come in here and be all loving to me. Like, you made me sick. Like, you made me the way I am. And you can't start saying that you love me. And that also feels like that like child voice is also like, you don't actually love me. You would love me if I was like all light and pure and good. And that's what you're really saying when you say that you're perfect, but you don't love me for the darkness and like the shit that's inside of here too.
Thank you so much for that. Cause that is 100% what that little boy should feel. And we don't want, and what I want you to bring back with the voice that I'm asking you to cultivate is, you are totally right, my friend, but I'm right here. You are right to feel angry. You are right to feel mistrustful. You're right to feel resentful. You're right to feel disbelieving. And I hear you. And guess what? You're going to learn. Because every day I'm going to show up and I'm never going to waver. I love your darkness. Bring it on. It's what makes you interesting. I love your sexuality. Let's learn to express it. Let's learn to love out loud. You can hate me for as long as you want. I don't care. I'm right here. Your confidence is what he needs.
That makes so much sense to me. So like, I have tried for a long time and I realized that this is now not the right approach, I don't think, but I'll still bring it up. I've tried for like a long time to like forgive myself and be like, oh, I forgive you for, you know, that or whatever. I know you were doing the best you could and like all that. And that voice has always flared up, that child voice, you know, with like the liar, all that stuff. And I feel like when I was saying I like forgive myself, it was like, I am willing to forgive you for doing this bad thing. I'm willing to forgive you for being bad, as opposed to kind of what you were saying, which was like the confidence. And yeah, I don't know if you have like thoughts on that, because I am honestly so tired of trying to forgive myself.
Yeah, no, don't try it. Forgiveness is a natural consequence of doing the work. You don't have to try to forgive yourself. If you're not ready to forgive yourself, it will add more fuel to the fire. It'll be like a rageful event, which it sounds like it has been.
Oh yeah.
No. What you need to do is, okay, so I'll tell you a really quick story. When my son Oliver was born, Isabella was 22 months old, and she started about a month before he was born, she started acting out like a monster. We would be at a play date and she would just put both of her hands in the kid's curly hair and grip and pull like she was it was so embarrassing. It was like she went from this like lovely child to a complete monster. She wouldn't listen to me, she would throw things. And so I consulted with this professor who had taught the child development series in my graduate work, because she was the best. I like had such respect for her. And she was so kind to do a private session with me. And I told her the whole story in despair. I think I wrote her like a 50-page email about like what a good kid she used to be. Meanwhile, she's 22 months old. what a good kid she used to be. And then what a terror she is now. And that I was, you know, 9 months pregnant. And she gave me the simplest instructions, because at that point, the baby was already born. And she said, I want you to nurse that baby. And then you hand that baby to anyone who is responsible enough to just hold it. And every other thing in the day you do for Isabella, you tie her shoes, you wipe her ass, you drive her everywhere, you feed her every meal. And throughout the day, as you're doing it, as many times as you can remember, let's say 10 times a day, you look her in the eye and you go, look how mommy takes care of you. That's it. It took her 2 days, and I'll never forget this. It always makes me cry. We were in the car, and she was in the back seat, and I was just driving her somewhere, and I said, look how mommy takes care of you. And she looked at me, a two-year-old, and she goes, so you mean you're not going to leave?
Oh, God.
It was crazy. And then her behavior completely changed. She never acted that way again. And so what I'm saying is all a little kid needs is consistency. They just need to keep having you keep showing up. And even though they are going to be like, I'm certain that this is a totally out of control situation that is never going to change. This new baby is in the house. My life is ruined. Everything is over. This woman is leaving me. You know, that's, she was sure. And all I had to do was, without much fanfare, show up. That's all you need to do, honey.
Mm. So when I show up, I should show up from more of a place of like confidence and look how I take care of you, as opposed to a place of like, oh, like, yeah, I'm going to take care of you. It's going to be okay. I don't know that.
Yes.
Okay. Totally.
Yes. And listen, I don't ever want to prescribe your journal speak. If you have a day one day where you're like feeling really tender toward the inner child and wanting to express yourself that way, that's fine. But I want you to realize what you needed as a kid was for your mom and dad to come upon that sexual experience you had and be like, listen, bud, it's not really straight up that 7-year-old and a 12-year-old are going to get busy. So we're going to make sure that you're okay. But you know what? You're fine. Nothing's wrong with you. You know, this was curiosity and you guys were doing it. You're good. You're fine. That's what you needed. But instead, there was a lot of fear and like, oh my God, oh my God. And that's what we're trying to resolve.
Totally. Absolutely. You just mentioned journal speak. Should I talk to that child in journal speak? I normally just like, you know, rage on the page and stuff like that. But is that something I should bring into my practice?
Absolutely. Inner child work is so important, but it's not so much talking to the child, it's listening. So what I like to tell people to do in terms of that is, you know, every once in a while, it doesn't have to be every day, because if you need to rage, you rage. Mm-hmm. But I pick a child, I pick an image of myself at whatever age comes up for me. And I say, tell me what it's like to be you. Tell me what it's like in first grade. Tell me what it's like, you know, to be doing a little bit of a harder work. Or tell me what it's like in sixth grade. You're in a new school, you know, like, how is it? What happened with that girl? Tell me, you know, and like, just allow him to speak, because that's what needs to happen. And then you are the confident, calm, collected, somewhat almost like chill. Like, it's not that nothing's such a big deal. A kid is looking to you and your nervous system is looking to you to say, there's nothing to see here. We're good. I'll stay here as long as you need me to, but like this, there's no fire. We're good. And then I just think, Robin, you needed to hear a lot of this stuff we're talking about today. Your shift is coming for you, because you just need to realize there was never a problem. The movie you're watching of your childhood, you need to watch it again with your grown-up eyes and realize that all that stuff that happened, you were never bad. You never did anything. You never needed half of those doctors or three quarters of all of them, you know, like, but it's just, we need to relearn that, and it's going to take a minute, but you're going to be on your way. I promise you.
Absolutely. I mean, I already feel it just in this conversation. Yeah, no, you're right. And I know that part of me like wants to hold on to that identity so hard of like, there is stuff wrong with me and my childhood was terrible and I'm sick and I should just stay, you know, because it's scared of what it means when I let go of that stuff. Like, I have to go and live a life.
That's right. Totally. And part of your journal speak is you have to realize, I think a lot of people don't realize this. If you let that part of you speak, it doesn't make it bigger. It makes it smaller. I think that people think like, oh, if I let that voice, that's what I don't want to feel. That's what I don't want to, I want to go away from that. So let's not talk about it. No, you have to let that kid say, you're wrong, Big Robin. I'm sick. I'm gross. I'm disgusting. Leave me here. Like, let him speak anything. Or I need this, you know, maybe that anxiety comes up. I need this. I need to be the sick one. This is my identity. Like, whatever it is, as you let it speak, it will start to fall away naturally. The forgiveness will come.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I feel that for sure.
All right, my love. Well, we have to wrap this up. It has been my greatest pleasure getting to know you today. And I hope we can talk again because I just think you're awesome.
Thank you so much. And I wanted to thank you not only for having me on today, but for saving my life. You have. And I wanted to thank you for giving me my life back.
You could not be more welcome. I struggle to feel the depth that my work, helps and affects people, and I'm working on it. But your words mean a lot to me, so thank you.
Thank you.
All right, everybody. I hope and I know you got a lot out of this real-time heal. And please, if you're enjoying the podcast, do go over to iTunes and rate and review it, because it helps people just like Robin, who had no idea about it, find the podcast and help themselves. And until next time, this has been The Cure for Chronic Pain with me, Nicole Sachs. I'll see you then. Bye-bye.